Scott, Vincent, you guys ready?
We're all Skyped in, ready to go.
Yeah, I think so. All right, here we go. When in doubt, restart.
It's time for the Apple Watchcast. Apple Watchcast, a podcast dedicated to the Apple Watch.
It's time once again for the Apple Watchcast, where we talk about any and everything Apple Watch, Apple's most personal device yet. This is episode 110, a bonus episode for the week of May 29th. I'm your host, Tom, and joining me, as always, is Scott and Vincent. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey there.
And welcome to our special guest, Mr. Andy Iannocco, columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times, host of the Iannocco Almanac podcast, a regular on MacBreak Weekly, This Week in Tech, as well as I believe he has a new podcast called Material. Hello, Andy. It's our pleasure to welcome you to the Apple Watchcast.
Thank you for giving me another chance to use my social skills, which I'm still developing at a snail's pace.
Perfect. We've all been big fans of your work over the years, and it's a real treat to get to talk to you.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Sure. And I want to cover as much ground as we can during this interview. So I guess the best place, I guess, to kick this off is kind of the beginning. When the Apple Watch was announced and everyone was all excited about it, what was your initial reaction to that keynote event?
Well, let's see. I was there, and okay. you always get sort of a different filter when you're actually there. What I hope people understand is that there are all kinds of people in that room. It's not just 300 or 1,000 members of the press and analysts who are all going cheering and going nuts, yay! Because oftentimes a serious percentage of those people are actual Apple employees. So it's not as though they stack the deck to make sure that it feels like a really exciting event. Those people are learning about this Apple Watch as at the same moment that everybody else is. So they are genuinely excited. But it also you have to be sort of aware when I'm in the room that. If people are cheering, it might not necessarily be because they are jaded, independent individuals that are simply allowing their emotions to go in whatever direction that an independent observer would. So it was a great event. I have to say that I was super impressed with the size of the device. I wasn't expecting something quite that size. Given that I've been using wearables for almost daily for the previous year and a half, basically every single wearable you could imagine, I certainly wasn't expecting it to be that small. I will also be honest and say that I thought it was one of the most confused debuts that Apple has ever put out.
Yeah.
Because I really was left wondering, gee, why are there so many buttons and dinguses on this thing? And why is there – do they imagine that I'm going to need to have this really cool constellation of icons because I'm going to have so many apps on this thing and I'm going to be launching so many apps manually on it? And they never – in the rollout, they never really got to what the purpose of the watch is. You know, they never really communicated what the personality of it was. It wasn't like the rollout of the iPhone, where arguably it was a much bigger product. It was much more important. But you also got the impression that this is why we needed to make an iPhone. Similarly, this is why we needed to make an iPad when the first iPad came out, even though they were also being cagey about, we don't want to make you think that this is a notebook and we don't want you to think that this is a big phone, but we're going to at least communicate how we imagine people using it. Just the fact that they had a really nice chair, a pair of comfortable chairs on there, and they had Steve Jobs just sitting on the chair with the iPad on his lap, that really sold, here's how we imagine people using this, as he was giving the demo. There was really nothing like that going on with the watch. So you can never really give – when Apple or any other company announces the hardware and says that's going to be available some months later, you always have to be aware that this isn't necessarily the whole story that they had been hoping to tell at this point, that there was going to be a whole bunch of features and a whole bunch of attitudes that were still being argued about we only have so many resources and so much time left to strike that golden master. What's going to make the cut and what can we finally show to people? But nonetheless, I was concerned at that point. The price of the Apple Edition watch Watch Edition was, oh dear, inducing. So suffice to say, there's a lot of stuff that was still on the in the back of my mind of, okay, we'll see what this is like to actually wear one in a few months. I'm going through the list of I'm really pleased that they did such a great job on the hardware, because this is definitely gonna, if the past is any indication, this was going to be the hardware reference that was going to last for at least 2 years. And I really thought that they had worked really hard to make sure that they had all of the hardware that they wanted to put in there for the next couple of versions of watchOS. But yeah, I wouldn't say that it was a letdown. I just think that I felt like I was getting the first half of a story and I was going to get the second half of it at actual launch day.
When you physically got to handle it, what was your impression of the watch overall? I mean, all the different finishes, the aluminum and the steel and the edition. I don't know. What was your impression of that?
A very, very strong impression. It really wasn't designed like a gadget. It wasn't. It really was put together like you would expect a watch to be put together. Even the cheapest version of it seemed like it was fitted together the way that someone would expect a $300 or $400 watch to appear when they take it out of the box. I was super impressed by swapping out watch bands that easily. Something it's like when I wrote about it initially, I had to almost apologize to everybody saying, I can't believe that I'm speaking with great enthusiasm about a watch band, but it's a really it's such a nicely designed system, and it sort of answers all the complaints people might have been having about does someone really want to spend $400 for a watch that might go out of date pretty soon? Well, they might if it will take the role of three or four different sport and dress watches that they might have. I should point out though that they were super careful about what they would let you do with those watches. There were some that were actually functional, and if you were sneaky, you could get your hands on those. And yes, I was sneaky, but it was they really just put you through a demo mode that was just playing a script as opposed to being interactive in any way, shape, or form. And that's to be expected on a device that's really, really early. I got to handle the very first iPhone like on the day that they had its actual debut. I was in the back room, handed this device, and pretty much it was functional, but there was anything that might have caused this thing to crash had been turned off. So like the phone system had been turned off. There were a couple of apps. There's one or two apps that had led to just JPEGs of what this app would look like. It wasn't like the Notepad app was just a picture of the Notepad. So that's okay, given that it was going to be a few months ahead of schedule. So unfortunately, I couldn't get a really good idea of what the interactivity would be like. I couldn't really take a walk through the user interface. I thought that the digital stem, for whatever purpose it was going to be devoted to, was a nicely machined piece of hardware. I was impressed by the hardware itself, but it was another case where I'm going to have to defer judgment until I feel like I can have a real experience with this watch.
Okay, so basically two things. Did you have a device on, a smartwatch you were wearing at the event?
I was wearing a Moto 360, which I had been wearing pretty much daily since it. I think I got mine about a month before. I think they actually launched it in, I want to say, a few weeks beforehand, and it had been going gangbusters. It had really emphasized all the reasons why Google made the choices that it did in making their own watch operating system. And of course, the ability to be using this thing day after day after day and seeing how it actually the incidents in which it really helps me out and incidents in which I just really didn't care, that might have sort of influenced the way that I was looking at Apple Watch. But to be fair, I had also been testing other watches like the Pebble, which I wore for about a month and then put away, not because I didn't like it, but because it didn't really it wasn't really making an impact in my life other than telling me what time it was. And a couple other fitness devices like that where they were fun to play with and they certainly had features, but not enough so that if I misplaced the charger for this fitness band for a few days, that I would, if I don't find it within 4 days, I would break the habit of putting it on every day. And then I'm not motivated to go and find where that charger is because, oh my God, I can't believe that I've been without this wonderful fitness band for the past 4 or 5 days. Whereas with my Moto 360, I'm very, very disappointed with myself if I pack for a trip and I don't have the charger for it.
Wow. So were you shocked at the price of the Apple Watch, and which one did you wind up getting?
I wound up buying the Sport because I knew that this wasn't something that Apple loaned me a piece of hardware, but I knew that I was going to want to have one for my permanent library. And I wasn't tempted at all by the steel. I wasn't by the Apple Watch nothing. And of course, I'm not spending 10 grand on a gold. If I was spending 10 grand on a gold watch, I want an actual gold watch. I don't want a gadget watch that they decided to pour something else into the mold, which is pretty much what you got when you get the Apple edition. It was just fine for a test watch for me, and I did actually had to wait a couple of weeks to get it because they were in such short supply.
So you infamously switched to Android a while back, and I know that's for many different reasons. But with the Apple Watch, you kind of had to go back to the iPhone for a while, right? What was that experience like?
It was interesting. It was valuable too. Before the Apple Watch arrived at my house, I imagined that, well, maybe I'll just I'll keep an iPhone in my pocket and I'll just Wi-Fi tether it to my real phone. And then I quickly realized that, well, that's not going to be fair. That's not how people are going to be using this. So I really do have to switch back to my iPhone 24/7. I did buy a secondhand iPhone 6 Plus. And I also thought that, well, I haven't been using, I never stopped using the iPhone, but, of course, I had not been using it as my daily driver. So that week, I just decided, okay, I'm going to switch to the iPhone full time, not only to give the Apple Watch a fair shake, but also it'll be valuable to me to go back to this operating system full time to see if the reasons why I switched have been mitigated by the latest couple of updates to iOS, and maybe if I want to stay with the iPhone. So I actually was a full-time iPhone user all summer long. I didn't actually formally switch back until, I think, November, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow. So how long had it been since you had gone from Android back to Apple Watch, or back to Apple iPhone, sorry?
Yeah, a couple of years, I think. I think it was early 2013.
Okay.
So that would be a couple of years. And I did find that... I guess I learned a couple of things, one of which that, God, Android and at this point of their development, Android and iOS are so close to each other now. Mm. It becomes a question of style more than stability, app library, or functionality. It becomes what point of view do you appreciate more? Do you appreciate the iOS idea where Apple has really thought out everything on your behalf and has tried to make things as safe and secure as possible, even if it comes at the cost of allowing you some choices? Or do you prefer the Android way where it's going to be less stable without being unstable? But if there's anything you don't like about this, you feel as though you're in control. And you feel as though if there is a way to get, for instance, apps to talk to each other, that maybe makes it a little bit less secure and maybe a little bit less safe, but oh my goodness, the ability to switch to different input devices really, really quickly. If you value those kind of choices, you have this available to you. And it really is a matter of taste now. I don't think that and the hardware is pretty much on the same level. I would even say the cameras are on the same level as each other, with the exception of stability of third-party apps and maybe even stability of the baked-in camera apps. I definitely trust the iPhone camera app to work when I don't necessarily trust the Android camera app to always work. But it really is that close. And if someone is a little bit challenged by the idea of spending $700 on a new iPhone, definitely at least take a look at like a $350 Nexus 5X, because you will find you'll be so shocked at how close those two are feature for feature. And as in terms of physical styling, once you put this thing in a $25 rubber case, they all look the same anyway. So
right, and that's where kind of the ecosystem or the stickiness of the operating system kind of comes into play, right? That's what keeps people, you know, either totally Apple or not.
Yeah, because it really is a serious investment in apps.
Right.
But I was also, and it's also an additional problem for people switching from iOS, because there's so much of the Apple ecosystem that is only going to run on things with an Apple logo on them. Fortunately, even long before I decided to switch to Android, I kind of decided that I didn't want to have my notes locked into a single platform app. I didn't want my photos locked into a single platform app. And really, with the exception of messages, I had already switched to Evernote and other device agnostic systems, so that it was just as easy as downloading the Android version of this app and logging in, and suddenly this device would work exactly as well as my iPhone did.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, keeping your devices separate from that's a coding framework. You want to keep your hardware and your software separate.
I just wouldn't like to be in the position where I feel as though I have to buy the next iPhone because it's going to be too much trouble to switch everything that I have onto something else.
So you mentioned at the release the watch was more kind of just a stem, and Apple was trying to figure out what the rest of the picture was, and Android, you know, releasing their wearables again as well. Do you think the world is ready for Apple Watch and wearables? It's a multi-billion dollar company inside a company. Some people are still saying it's a flop. Where is this headed?
Well, it's certainly not a flop. I mean, any company would love to flop on the basis of selling as many millions of Apple Watches as Apple has. I think that's just sour grapes and wanting to see Apple fail or something. But if they have underperformed in any way, it's only that the Apple Watch hasn't had the same impact culturally, say, as the iPhone did, as the iPad did. It has just existed, which is okay. I've written a piece about the Apple Watch after a year that's still in editing channels. I think it'll be on the Sun-Times site next week, I hope. I really had to lay bare a couple of things I had to learn before I was able to speak intelligently about Apple Watch. And one of them was that the realization that actually came out only after a couple of months, that for this to be a valuable device, for this to be a valuable watch for its owner, all it has to be is a cool watch. And that sounds like I'm denigrating it, but I think that's absolutely true. I spent about $300 for a nice watch before. I'm sad to say that the Apple Watch is the most expensive watch I've ever bought. And even though it's not quite as nice as this other watch the Swiss Railway watch that I really, really like. But I spent like $250, $300 for the watch I was wearing every day before that. And all that watch does is tell the time, it tells the date, and I enjoy looking at it on my wrist. Mm-hmm. And it seems silly for me or anybody else to demand that the Apple Watch be anything other than that. Anything other than that is a really serious bonus. All someone has to do is enjoy having the Apple Watch on their wrist and have it tell them the time and the date and whatever other pieces of data that the thing can deliver. And it is a success. Whether you think it should do more, whether you think that it should have a broader role to perform, that's kind of a side issue. There are many people are going to spend $350 or even $1,000 on this and be really, really happy with what they got. The other thing that I had to say about it was that I just wish this thing had a point of view. It really is, to my eye, it really is just one of those. And that's not something that Apple tends to do. When they made the iPhone, it was certainly born from the success of the BlackBerry, the success of Palm OS devices, the success of Nokia smartphones. But Apple didn't decide to just make one of those. With the watch, they said they looked at its as if they looked at Pebble, they looked at Android Wear, and they said, "Oh, well, it's a nice $200 to $400 watch that gives you notifications and fitness data and can run apps. We got one of those too. Look at ours." It just is, it doesn't. Whereas Android Wear seems to have an attitude about, again, a point of view saying that this device is for 5 second long interactions. It seems to be built on the idea that, just as a conventional analog watch is something that you glance at to get one piece of information that's vital to you at that moment, even if it's just what time is it right now, and then you put your wrist back down again. Android Wear seems to be built on that idea that you're going to turn your wrist to get one piece of information, and for that reason, it's important for the operating system to guess at what piece of information you're looking for. And so it's very, very proactive. Like when I'm looking for when I'm heading for a meeting, I can check my watch and it'll have a little card at the bottom part of the screen that has like the title and the date and here's where I'm going. When I've got a process in action, if I'm listening to music, if the player on my phone is working, there is a little top of a card that says, here's the title of the thing that you're listening to. Here's a pause button if you want to stop it. And if you swipe to the left, here's going to be volume and track selectors and stuff like that. And if I'm doing something else, then that won't be there. It'll be replaced with something else. That's what I mean by a point of view. It's decided this is the role that we think that people want a watch to play in their lives. Whereas the Apple Watch is just, we made one of those. You know how you have a phone and apps on the phone? We got a wristwatch, and you can get apps on the wristwatch. And we're not going to make anything particularly easier. We're not going to make it particularly different from the way that you interact with stuff on your phone. But look, we've got one of those. The difficulty that Apple and everybody else is facing, though, is that nobody knows what they, as a consumer, want a watch to do. It's a totally new category,
right?
And we haven't been. There's no success that Apple can pattern their design after. You know, the famous saying about the design of the first iPhone was that it was designed by people who had been using smartphones for years and years and years. And it was born out of everything that they hated about the smartphones in their pockets. And so that makes you hate is a really good motivator for good design. Basically, I'm not going to screw this up the way that I feel that other people screwed up on this phone that I just paid $500 for. And not to say nothing of the fact that they can do research to say, here is what we can talk to 1,000 people and ask them what they use their phones for. We can find out what the most popular apps for these other platforms are. And that will really tell us what people are hoping to get out of this device. There has never been a real success with wearables yet. So they really are shooting blind right now. It puts them in the same position, I think, that other companies have historically been in, where they can't be like a sniper. Just where they're lying in wait, they take one shot at the target and they hit it dead center. They have to be like, you know, Tony Montana and Scarface. They have to just keep spraying the room with bullets, see where the bullets land, and keep moving the gun until the bullet holes get closer and closer to the target. It's messy, but you do wind up hitting the target. So this
until you run out of bullets.
Exactly. So and keep in mind that Apple has billions of dollars and many years to spend firing at this target.
They have a lot of bullets.
But they'll get there eventually.
You know, it's funny because you kind of summed up really what this show is all about, you know, that we do, because everybody has a different take on what they want that watch to do. You know, Vincent, Tom, myself, you know, we all have different opinions, different views and stuff in different ways that we do that. So, and we just like sharing that type of information with everybody. So I want to ask, of all the wearables that are on the market right now, which is your favorite? And which one do you find yourself wearing the most? I mean, I know you have two arms like, you know, most everybody else. Do you have one on each wrist? You know, are you testing all these guys out all the time, or you know, which one do you wear more?
Well, my daily wear is the second generation Moto 360. Okay. I think that's as close to right as anybody has gotten a smartwatch yet, because it's the biggest difference between it and last year's model is that it's now about the same size as an Apple Watch, so it doesn't really call any attention to itself. I think it's very, very pretty. I love the round dial. I think that there have been a lot of people who've been saying, well, like, you know, round dials, round smartwatches don't work because user interfaces are designed to be square. Like, yeah, they need to be square if you're going to put as much crap on that screen as a badly designed watch interface. But this is a well-designed watch interface, and you actually need less room than that. I don't mind the – and people – some people also make fun of the flat tire, that little wedge of – that little slice at the bottom of the screen on the Moto.
Right.
Because that's where they put the display driver and the light sensor. But the reason why it's – what you get from having that sensor – there is that you get a bezel that is just super, super narrow. It's the face of this watch is almost 100% screen, as opposed to having sort of a thick sort of bezel that goes all the way around it. And the ability to get custom watch faces that look just dazzlingly pretty. And also just the wonderful bizarreness of seeing a round display. I just have to admit the novelty of seeing a computer with a round display just makes me really, really happy. But the main thing is that, again, it has a point of view that I really, really like. I will simply turn my wrist, and chances are 5 out of 7 that if there was a piece of data for which I would have to navigate a user interface on the Apple Watch to get there, I think chances are 5 out of 7 that piece of information is already there waiting for me on my Android Wear watch. And if it's not there, it's probably 2 or 3 card scrolls deep. And with a later version of Android Wear, they actually added gestures. So I don't have to like free a hand and scroll to get to the next card. If I just simply twist my wrist a little bit, it will scroll automatically. And so I can just find what gate is my I'm listening to music, so I've got actually a music card on the screen. But I need to know like what if my next flight is delayed or something. I can just see that, okay, here's the name of the podcast, but flick, okay, here's US Air flight whatever, and it's boarding at on gate whatever. And the ability to simply do that without having to touch the watch at all, for me, is just a really, really big deal. I also like just plain old fitness bands. I really like Garmin's Vivo Smart, for instance, because it presents itself on your wrist as a simple, thin black rubber fitness band, but it can deliver the stuff that most people seem to really gravitate towards, which is the ability to have notifications delivered from your phone to your wrist, to do simple actions on that notification, to control the music playback going through your Bluetooth headphones, and also do fitness tracking. And the other nice thing about wearables of that form factor is that it leaves your primary wrist open for your great grandfather's Hamilton wristwatch that he got for retirement. You don't have to put that thing in the drawer because you have to have the gadget watch on your primary wrist. And yes, to answer your question, when I'm testing out a new watch, I will often have a watch on each wrist because I don't necessarily want to. Maybe that just speaks to how much I like my Moto 360, that I don't want to be without it, especially if I'm traveling. So I will have the Microsoft Band 2 on my right wrist, but I'll have my regular watch on the left wrist.
Well, sometimes you have to have a means of comparison. So
yeah,
right. You know that you mentioned the gesture thing. With my luck, I'd turn my wrist and change the thermostat. So I don't know how that would work for me. But you mentioned all these different wearables. Do you still use the Apple Watch on a regular basis?
Not regularly, no.
Okay.
I will take it out from time to time to check out a new app or a software update. I suspect that I'm going to be using it a lot in late June and July after WWDC.
Hopefully,
yeah. But it's not going to be. I think that the best answer to my opinion on watches is that if I really, really loved the Apple Watch, it would still be on my wrist. Mm-hmm. Even if I was limited to whatever hacks allow it to work with Android, or even if I had to switch back to the iPhone to keep it working. And this doesn't invalidate other people's experiences with it. If you use and like your Apple Watch, that's great. I'm happy that anybody has found something that improves their life, but it was just such a non-issue to when the new Nexus phones came out, I really like this phone. I really want to switch. I don't want to delay this any longer. And that my watch just went back in its box, went into a nice drawer, nicely organized with its charging cable, so I could find it on a moment's notice. And I really never missed it.
So, what do you think is the Apple Watch's greatest weakness? Is it battery life? Is it apps? Or is it just the whole ball of wax, everything together?
Battery life is fine. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one of the first things I learned when I started wearing wearables, that before it seemed like it was going to be a really big deal to, oh, really, only one day battery life? Gee, Josephat, how can you do? But then you quickly learn that, well, I'm going to take it off and put it on my nightstand every night anyway. Is it a big deal that I'm going to put it on top of a charger when I put it on the nightstand? So it's really, so long as it can get me through a real 24-hour day, that's perfectly fine. I think that I have a vague answer and a specific answer to your question, though. The vague answer is, again, it just seems to have no point of view. It doesn't say here is why we decided that we had to enter the wearables market in 2015. Because we had such an important message, we had such a great idea for a wearable device that now was definitely the time for us to do that. It really does communicate to me as, look, we made one of those, which is, again, they're entitled to do that. And it's also possible that they appreciated that the only way we're going to figure out how to build a really great wearable is to start selling them and then see how people are using them. But that's the main vague reason. The main specific reason is that it's just too complicated for me. You know, it seems to think that I'm going to spend some time getting engaged with the software that's on the watch, when truly I will almost always have a phone in my pocket for that kind of thing. If I want to get engaged in content or in an app or in a task, I'm going to take out, my natural instinct is going to be to get out my phone to do that. And so the first weeks I spent with my Apple Watch, when I'm going out for constitutional and I want to what's my distance, what's my heart rate, what's all this other sort of stuff, the fact that it's doesn't simply at that point it doesn't simply understand that, well, here's an activity that's ongoing, so clearly he's going to want to have this information really, really close by. Well, no, I have to swipe up to get to glimpses and then scroll to get to the glimpse that has my heart rate and stuff on that. It's like, really? I really have to be doing that in order to get at information that you can tell there's an ongoing process. The fact that I'll be driving in my car and it will buzz and say, I know you're doing, it's going to tell me it's time to stand up and walk around a little bit.
That's we've mentioned that before. Yeah.
That's just, I've never, it seems, it's hard to respect the device when it's making a mistake as bold as that one. And I'm sure that this is not a mistake that will live forever.
Right.
It's rarely appreciated how Apple doesn't have infinite resources. I'm sure that at some point that was on a list of things they needed to deal with. But it was here. It's like Apollo 13. Do you want to keep the lights on, but you really need to keep the oxygen flowing? So let's get to the oxygen first, and then maybe if there's time, we'll fix the light problem.
That's funny.
So your opinion from the get-go, you know, when you first saw the Apple Watch to now, or even in the future, it doesn't sound like your opinion of the watch has really changed in there. I mean, did you like have super high hopes for this or anything like that, or you were just taking it as it comes? You know, where do you stand now? Where do you think you stand in the future with as far as Apple Watch goes?
Apple is a special company, just like Google is, where they don't have famously, when Palm was bought by HP, they had really one shot to have a huge success with their next phone. And when it wasn't an immediate huge success, then that was it for Palm's phone business. Apple and Google are not in that position. They have enough time and they have enough ability to plan that they can keep firing until they get things absolutely right. And even when they have a failure, that failure will teach them stuff that will help them make better products. Google, of course, still gets a lot of flack for Google Glass. But guess if you look at the people who are responsible for Google's VR strategy, a lot of them came from the Google Glass team. And if you look at the cards interface that is informing pretty much every piece of software that that Google does, the first articulation of that idea was on Google Glass. So it's not as though they're going to throw away experiences if it wasn't immediately crashingly successful. I'll say that you have to have an open mind about these things. I'm always been grateful for the fact that I'm not just an Apple reporter, that I write about the entire industry. So if I if I have praise for the new iPhone, it's because I've also spent a lot of time with the new Samsung phone and the new Nexus phone and the new Microsoft phone. And I can, I know it's, I'm not enthusiasm about Hamilton because I, the musical, because I've never seen a musical before. And oh my God, people are singing and dancing 10 feet away from me. It's because if I'm impressed by a musical, it's because I've seen a lot and now this is what it takes to impress me. If I wasn't dazzled by it's true that I wasn't dazzled by Apple Watch. I'm still not dazzled by it. I think it's a functional item. I think it works primarily well as a cool watch. And again, that's not an insult by any way, shape, or form. We need cool watches. They're cool watches that cost $5,000 that their owners are extremely happy with. And at least this one doesn't lose 5 minutes of time every single month. I'm still waiting for Apple to figure out what this watch is for. I'm still waiting for them to make the argument of here is why we had to make this and no other company is going to make this. I would think that their answer to that would be that they're approaching it as a piece of jewelry and not as a piece of technology. But I don't, if that is their position, I don't think they really succeeded because it is a very good looking gadget watch, but it is just a gadget watch.
Yeah, I have to wonder if part of this launch, and we talked about this when the show has been going on since, you know, actually right before the release of the watch, but we talked about how I thought that the actual keynote, the presentation, was a bit of a failure. And I think we kind of echoed some of the stuff you were talking about. And I think it just had to do, like you said, no point of view. But I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that also, as you mentioned earlier, that this is early for Apple to enter a particular category. Like you said, the iPhone, they had, you know, they looked at all the mistakes everybody else made and they did it better. Same with the iPad. They looked at all the mistakes. They did it better. And they just jumped. This is one of the few I can remember that they jumped in so early. So I think that may have something to do with the fact that this is still kind of forming, you know, it's not quite there yet. But yeah, what I really wanted to ask you about was there's a recent revelation, I think it was last week or week before, that Steve Jobs kind of asked the Apple management team to fix the healthcare experience of sorts that he went through, at least as far as it goes with technology and the data, your personal health data, et cetera. And that health kit, research kit, and care kit, with the Apple Watch being at the center of it all, is actually their response to that. What do you think of that as kind of the killer feature that Apple will be working towards in the watch?
Well, I don't have any inside information along those lines. I will say that I was a little surprised by the form factor of the Apple Watch because I had been coming to the conclusion that Apple was building a fitness device more than a little iPhone that you wear on your wrist.
Right.
And that they're aiming a little bit lower, that the game plan was that they were trying to, they're aiming more towards the Fitbit than Android Wear, which filled me full of optimism for the product, because to make something affordable that would be like a Fitbit, only less fiddly and more ambitious, that seems like it's right within Apple's wheelhouse, and not $350 and not $10,000. that would have been nice as well. I think that I've said it before. I do think that the most important thing that Apple is doing right now is HealthKit. The scale, mm-hmm. the scope, the ambition of HealthKit, and also tying in with ResearchKit, its goal really is to enhance and extend human life and to reduce and try, and in many cases, eliminate human suffering. And there's no higher calling for technology. This is why it's wrong for us to have these kind of expectations of any technology company, even mm-hmm. even Apple. But it's why I think that the Apple Watch Edition is the most embarrassing product, maybe the only truly embarrassing product that Apple has ever done, because they're making all the resources that they have available to them. I mean, I this is it, for a while, I was actually kind of angry about Apple Watch Edition. And because here we have a company that was another company that was formed to say, we want to make a computer that every single kid can afford. Mm-hmm. And that turned into Raspberry Pi. And they have built an incredible $35 computer, and the follow-up was an incredible $5 computer. And their goal going forward is to, we will always make a $35 Raspberry Pi. We will keep adding features to it as costs come down, but it will always be capped at $35. We will always make a super, super cheap one where we're willing to cut corners to make it even less expensive. And so it's not just a toy computer. It's something that you can learn how to program. You can learn how to write on this thing. You can learn electronics on this. It's such an important device. You have a company like Amazon that started off with a $400 Kindle, and there are still super high, super expensive versions of the Kindle, but they have brought the cost of essentially the Kindle 1.0 down to $60. No matter how they can, if they can get it, find a way to take another $10 off the cost of this thing, they're going to try to do it. And when you consider that this is a device where even if you don't spend another penny ever for this, it gives you access to 35,000 public domain works, including the greatest works ever created in any language that's available in the entire world. That is a remarkable achievement. Even Google. And we can have discussions about whether, you know, where are they trying to make their money from, and is it okay that they're trying to exploit their users? But the fact of the matter is that they are giving an operating system away. They're giving software away. They're making it possible to make not just a usable $250 laptop, but a terrific $250 laptop, one that's going to become even better with Android N, the next version of the Android operating system, because it's going to be able to run Android tablet software and be the most kick-butt $300 notebook ever made. And all the things that Apple could be doing to help the world, all the opportunities that only Apple seems to have to make life better in a real tangible way for people, and they decide that, no, we're going to make a $10,000 gadget watch. We feel as though that's a really good use of our resources. They're not obligated to do anything but to stay in business. I mean that truly. But I can't help but be disappointed by that. And so that's why it really puts an extra big smile on my face to see them putting so much effort into HealthKit. And it's not just an also-ran sort of, oh, and here's another footnote to the keynote. We also have this thing called HealthKit. They are really proud of it, and they give it 10 minutes, 15 minutes of space in their major press events, and they keep adding to it and expanding it. And just that ability to collect not just information for people like me who just want to be needled every time they miss their goal of how many hours they're going to spend on the bike and how many miles they're going to walk over the course of the week. I'm talking about helping diabetics have a normal life. I'm talking about diagnosing disorders when there are certain things that should be flagged that are different from behavior of the past several weeks. I'm talking about people who would have had problems leading an independent life because they're in a later stage of a terminal illness, and they need someone to at least flag to their doctors when something is a little bit out of whack. That is what keeps somebody out of nursing care for an extra 3 or 4 or 5 months. There is no end to the ambition of HealthKit, and it is the greatest work I think that Apple has ever done, and it might be the greatest work that Apple ever does.
Yeah, I mean, even this week, and just in our previous show that we just talked about the news, Tim Cook was at a conference in Amsterdam this week, and he seemed to echo the mission that they seem to be on about changing our relationship with health and technology. I think he called health the holy grail of the Apple Watch. So I was at least glad to hear him reaffirm that there is a vision for the future of the watch, that maybe it's just too early talked about that it's a little too early to kind of have that vision come to life yet, but that's the path that it's headed towards.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to see them go back to that device that I kind of imagined them making, which is a deeply sub $200 device that simply has all the sensors they need to collect HealthKit information. Because that's a real game changing device. I suppose would have the added ability to really put the hurt on a competitor, you know, Fitbit or Garmin or someone else like that. But again, their ability to do good is the biggest growth opportunity they possibly have. And I don't think they can do it with a watch that costs $350 or $400 at minimum.
Right. And I think there was also rumors early on that there were other types of monitoring health benefits and features that they just didn't get FDA approval on that we may see in the future.
Yeah. And well, there are a lot of therapeutic devices. Another holy grail sort of solution is just continuous blood monitoring for diabetics.
Yes.
That's a real holy grail sort of thing. And there's so many technologies for getting that sampling data, but none of it has none of it is within Apple's ability to build and deploy right now. It still is there are devices that are like that, but they are still on the level of your doctor has prescribed you this device, and the difficulties of having an abrasive object on your wrist. Your doctor has decided that the difficulties of a diabetic possibly introducing an open wound are for this patient, less of a problem than not having a good handle on his or her blood sugar levels. So it's and as you say, the idea of regulation is a mm-hmm. big deal. They'll get there. And I love to see that. I love that they have that level of true, sincere commitment to health.
Yeah, there's also been several instances, and we've talked about them again here on the show, famously with Tim Cook, where several people have said that the Apple Watch saved their life. That, you know, it gave them an early warning that they may not have had in the past. And I know it's, you know, very early in the game to be talking about that, but there are instances that pop up and you can see the potential.
Yeah, that's me. I've had not things that are quite that dramatic, but I have had incidences where, like, I was at a conference last year, and I had my Moto 360 on, and we'd just come back from lunch, and I'm listening to this person give a talk, and my heart starts racing. I don't know why it's doing that, and I'm thinking, okay, let's get data, let's take a look at what's my pulse level. Okay, my pulse is, which I have a normal resting pulse of something like 70, and it was up to like 110, 120, and I'm thinking, okay, let's sample that again in 5 or 10 minutes, and I see it went down to like 104 the next time I sampled, and then went down to 90 something. And that's when I start to think, okay, clearly it's because I don't know why my heart was racing, but they had like really like spicy Italian sausages. So maybe it was like there's salts or some sort of, you know, preservatives that were causing my heart to go that way. And I thought back to a time when I had hot and sour soup and then went to see a movie, and my heart was just going during this movie. And I'd not really been thinking about, well, maybe it was just the MSG and the soup. I'm thinking, okay, if my heart does not slow down soon, I need to leave the theater and see if I'm going to need medical attention. But the ability to simply, okay, here's my pulse right now. Here's this. It's a problem that every single company that collects data can work on. The number of times where I have helped myself out by taking a look at the data that that Google is collecting on me, during the winter, you know, if you're self-employed, you need to have a little extra goose to make sure that you stay active. And the ability to look at the calendar, a nice calendar presentation of here's the time, here's a map of all the times you left the house over the course of the month, and here are 4 or 5 days in which you left the house for about an hour on Tuesday, but you were inside the house for the entire week. And that sort of just alerted me to, we have to make sure that we make sure we get out of the house for mental health as well as for fitness level. But think about that, where you if you live alone and you don't have someone who is who can say, you know, honey, you're usually up and awake and doing stuff by 8 in the morning, and you seem to be sleeping in day after day after day. If you don't have that sort of presence in your life, you can have a piece of software that says, honey, you have this. It's unusual for you to not want to leave the house, and maybe it's because your depression is taking a hold of you. Maybe it's because you have been sick and you have not been able to leave the house. And maybe it takes an app to point out that this is unusual for you to not leave the house for 4 or 5 days, to convince you that perhaps this cold is something more serious than a regular cold that I'm just going to have to sleep off. Maybe I should actually call for an appointment with a doctor for this. And all this can be done with a simple $100 band on your wrist 24/7. So everybody is doing such wonderful work, and the faster that we can get this technology available to everybody, not just people who can afford or can make a case for themselves for a $400 watch, the better. But to Apple's credit, HealthKit works with everything. It integrates with everything. So you can buy the $100 or even the $50 fitness band, and you can collect all that data. So such wonderful things ahead for HealthKit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is an app. We review apps every week on the show. We've done tons of them. But this one's called Heartwatch. think is the name of it, that actually will notify you. You set a parameter. If my heart rate goes below this amount, tell me. If it goes over this amount, tell me. And it's great because every now and then I'll get a notification that, you know, at 9:10 this morning, your heart rate was, you know, low. If I go out for a run or I'm doing something, some exercise, it'll kind of bug me that I went high, and I know that because I was working out. But if you think back and you're like, well, I was just sitting on the couch at that time, why was it so low? You know, you start to wonder about this information. So it's a very complicated thing to give people so much data. That's kind of I think that puts it on the developers of the apps and these devices to make sure that it's presented in a very clear way.
Yeah, that's a good point, and makes you think that maybe there should be a class of apps that is only available via prescription.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because you really can mess up your own health by presenting too much data to a doctor.
Right.
There's a while ago, there was franchisees were buying these medical scanners, and you could just simply book some time in the scanner. They would, it's like almost like an MRI type device where it would just map your entire body. And then a technician would look at this entire map of your body and say, okay, well, you see this point here in your coronary artery. It looks like there's a little bend in it that is not normally in people. So you maybe want to check that out. There's a little thickening of this vessel right over here. When they were becoming popular, I was talking to researchers about it, and they were saying that this is probably one of the worst things that could possibly happen for medicine because the human body, it's not like a Toyota Corolla. It's not as though they're manufactured to an exact tolerance for every single copy of this human body that ever comes out. Maybe you just have a kink there in that artery because that's how it developed. And it's okay. It's just that there's no standard for what an artery should look like if it's not necessarily diseased. And that's why the diagnostic imperative of most medicine is if there's no symptoms of anything, then chances are it's not worth fooling. It's not worth interfering with somebody's good health. And of course, there are exceptions to this, but you don't do an exploratory surgery on somebody because they have images of an arterial wall that seems to be a little bit more bendy than what people are used to seeing. And it really becomes where the attempt to diagnose this is more disruptive to someone's health than whatever problem this may or may not not have. I think that it's useful when there are easy markers. It's useful when – I think it's more useful when you have data in aggregate, when you simply find out here is what your normal resting heart rate is over the course of like several months. It fluctuates a little bit, but generally I'm expecting it to see somewhere around 70. I just had my blood pressure taken today and it's 119 over – it's like normal over normal. And I would know that if it suddenly went up for some reason – that's significant. That's something that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Or if it suddenly went below that, that's significant. That's not normal for me. But it would be difficult to hand over this reams and reams and reams of data to a doctor and expect that, well, now I'm sort of now obligated to put you through a whole bunch of really expensive and really, disruptive tests because it would be unethical for me to be aware that, gee, your blood pressure is normally this. It was temporarily for 2 days a little bit high, and not test you for that because if there was a problem that I didn't catch it, forget the legal liability. I will feel as though I had made a big mistake. Whereas, again, you just shouldn't have had those hot wings for hot wings for dinner, and then you had the leftovers for lunch, and that's why your blood pressure was screwed up.
Hot wings does that?
I don't. I've never wanted to take that risk. I'm too scared of the hot wings. I did have the Wendy's has the ghost pepper fries now. I don't know if it's a limited offer. I did have the ghost pepper fries last week.
Oh my!
Fortunately, I didn't need to have any tests done. So,
like the kolache I had this morning was a.
I don't even know what kolaches are.
It's a big Texas thing. I know that, but it was a triple jalapeno kolache I had for breakfast this morning. It almost killed me.
Ugh. Yeah. I've never understood the idea of spice as a punitive gesture. as though like
it's okay, definitely a gesture.
At the I grew up Catholic, and I just imagine like, okay, well, you took the Lord's name in vain. You talk back to your parents. You're going to have 16 spicy hot wings and one bite of you were immediately penitent for it. So instead of the ghost pepper, you're going to have the whatever the two notches down from a ghost pepper are. It's like I feel my sin being burned away as I feel this thing making its way through my upper and lower GI tract.
I have to ask you, Andy, so you're not wearing the Apple Watch on a regular basis. Did you end up accumulating very many bands for it over that time?
A few. I bought the first knockoff band that I could find as soon as it became available, and was really pleased with it because shortly thereafter I went to one of my aunts was having her 85th birthday, and they rented out a little function room at a restaurant. And I was wearing, I was about to head out the door in like a nice little like silk blazer and a red shirt, and realized that, well, gee, I'm going out with my Apple Watch that had it's white band that it came with. And I said, wait a minute, I do have that red leather cheap ass band. I can have a band that matches my shirt. That's lovely. So I did wind up getting a few just to see like what the knockoff styles were like. I got a knockoff of the Milanese Loop, which was really quite nice. A knockoff of that of the Serpentine, the what are they calling it now? The one, the magnetic clasp that sort of wraps around and grabs onto itself, which I think is such a brilliant design. But I got a knockoff of that as well. And I can't say that I was displeased with any of those. I'm kind of worried that a lot of the nice bands for Apple Watch are just so ungodly expensive.
They are. They're very expensive. And you're right. A lot of the third party bands are really nice. Nice quality build. But I will say, when the new nylon woven bands came out from Apple, those are really nice, and they are the least expensive bands that they make.
$50 bucks, and they look just great. If this been a knockoff, I would say this is a very nice knockoff.
Mm-hmm. You see, that's why I've always bought into the line that the Apple Watch was more of a fashion statement. And I know I've got dinged a couple of times by Vincent and Tom on that statement and stuff. But is that something that you might agree with?
See, I don't know. It depends on what their goals were. When I come to think of it, I do think that if they had made a really super useful watch that looks like a gadget and you have to explain it to everybody you can't wear shirts with long sleeves and you can't, because you can't button it over it, and you feel as though you feel as though it's the wristwatch version of Google Glass, where the first conversation you have with anybody is going to be why you're wearing that thing on your wrist, and compare that to something that isn't nearly as useful, but it really does wear like a watch. I think that Apple would be better to create a more fashionable watch than a more useful watch. Because if no one, the least useful device is the device that you don't use and you don't take with you. So if part of their thinking was we're going to make something that people are going to really want to wear on their wrist, they're going to think that it's a very fashionable, very, very slick, lovely item just in and of itself. Like I said, all they have to do is make a cool watch and they'll make a successful product. They can fix the software. They can't necessarily fix an aluminum cube 1.5 inches on a side that weighs 3 pounds and has an external battery.
Yeah, you know, that whole fashion thing, you know, we talked about this earlier, but even before the watch came out, Apple was hiring all these famous fashion people as consultants, and they brought in, you know, before that, Angela Ahrens from Burberry, and it just seemed like they were on that path of becoming a fashion brand, if you will, and you can really see it when they came out with the watch, and you're right. I mean, the edition may have been a little bit too far in that direction. And we've noticed that since it was released, it's even harder to find on their website, the edition. You kind of have to look for it to find it. So they may be doing a little backpedaling on that one just a little bit. But it also may be that it just didn't sell that well.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. Remember that they went from at the first rollout saying, if you want to take a look at an Apple edition, you can make an appointment.
Yes.
And because they're going to be and we'll give you a 15-minute slot that has to start and end at the right time.
Yep.
And 2 weeks after the actual release, it's like it's just there in the bin. You want to see it? Great. No, we'll have, we're glad to actually get it out of the box for you.
Yeah. Vincent and myself went to one of the larger, nicer stores here in Houston, the Apple stores. And we knew someone who ran their business development thing. And he brought us into this special room. We went up in an elevator in this special place. And he let us try on the edition. It was quite a deal.
There was an armed guard.
Yeah, there was an armed guard standing there the entire time. So,
well, you know, Tom, you have a history.
That's true. Yeah. You better keep an eye on me. So, Andy, what do you think? We got WWDC coming up here in a couple of weeks. Yeah, what do you think we'll see in Watch 2, hopefully later this year?
I don't really know. I think that we're going to see refinements of the interface. Just refinements of the role that it plays with the user. I sure as hell hope that we get to see third party watch faces, because
big on the list.
I feel as though if there were two sets of features that Apple should have nailed right out of the gate, it should have been the fitness features, which I think they did a good job with, and the ability to create APIs for third-party watch faces, because the robust market, the robust app market on Android for third-party Android watch faces is part of what makes it so cool. The ability to get not just an approved watch face, but something that you like, and that even if other people hate it, you can. This is what you absolutely love, and the ability to swap out those watch faces on a whim or to get a specific goal. And with the update to Android Wear that they announced, Google announced at I/O last week, it's even more powerful. The level of customization that you get with it, I really thought that the watch faces that came with the Apple Watch were just really kind of stark. They really didn't please me in any way. There wasn't anything that I don't think it was ugly, but I thought it was just depressingly generic, and you're stuck with that for an entire year. And you can change the colors. Okay, fine. And you can make it so that it only has four numbers instead of 12 numbers. Okay, fine. But oh boy, the level of creativity that Apple developers are willing to expend to make this thing so much more interesting and so much more joyful and so much more tailored to the tastes of the individual user. I think they kind of missed a big opportunity by not having that ready to go. So if they don't have it ready to go in next month, or at least to show off, I'll be really disappointed.
So you're not happy with Jellyfish? Is that not enough for you? No.
See, you're reminding me of a lot of stuff that really just annoyed me about that rollout. That it's like I'm sitting there I've spent a lot of money to fly from Boston to Cupertino, not San Francisco, but all the way to Cupertino. Right. Okay, and I've taken like 3 days. I've got 3 days of the week that I can't really get anything done except for attend this and write about this. And I want to know the answer to the question: what is this designed for? Like, what is the goal of this? Why are people going to want to have this? And when they spend, we want to tell you about the incredible detail we put into filming the jellyfish for this background. I'm like, you have figured out exactly what I was hoping to learn at this event. My readers are can't wait to know. I hope that there's some sort of video background for the watch faces. And I hope that they didn't just CGI a really good fake jellyfish. I hope that they put jellyfish in tanks and spent millions and millions of dollars shooting video like that.
Oh,
the power to be your best.
I think it's probably the number one thing from that listeners of our show would say is probably the number one thing that they request is third party watch faces. You're not alone in that camp. We believe that too, and they kind of have to at this point. But I wanted to ask you the whole idea, and I know at Google I/O last week they announced this, and it's coming, a completely untethered watch from the phone. Do you think that is something that would help Apple against Android users to kind of lure them over to the other side? Or do you think it's going to be kind of still parody again at that point?
I don't know, because I'll be honest. I think that the field is still so wide open that anyone could suddenly become, you know, the iPhone of this category if they figure something out that no one else has. And I don't know if creating a watch that could be used independently of a phone is really the answer. It's certainly an, a big advantage now that it's summer and you have people who maybe don't want to be carrying a phone with them.
Right.
It's always been a big deal for people who are using it as a fitness device. Mm-hmm. But the I can't think of many situations in which I would leave the house without my phone anyway.
Right.
So I'm not sure how big of a sell that's going to be. If there are people who didn't like the Apple Watch, I don't think it's because it relied too much on the phone. If it could do more independently so that it's even though the phone is in your pocket, it doesn't need to talk to your phone, because that has always been just the death experience of how much time am I going to spend looking at this spinning please wait cursor on the screen. And just for funsies, why don't I reach in my pocket right now, take out my phone, do the thing that I wanted to do on the watch, and see if that little spinning wait cursor ends before I finish getting the information from my phone to begin with. That was really one of the nails in the coffin, where I just didn't find myself going to this watch for information because it was always faster just to get it off of the phone. So it's I've been kind of curious to know if any watchmaker, Apple or otherwise, sort of decide to instead of trying to create something that has LTE, has a real or a 3G radio in it, what if they decided to simply take advantage of just simple alphanumeric pager technology, where given that the transactions that this device need to have aren't necessarily as ambitious as having to have a full broadband internet mobile connection. All that needs to do is to send a simple packet of information to, let's say, a server to get a response back, to get a calculation back, or to simply report that here is where my location right now, here is my speed right now. And if they could do that and not kill the battery or make it super thick, that would kind of be interesting. I think that would make it into its own sort of device. It would also be interesting to create an independent device that made it irrelevant whether you're using an Android phone or an iPhone.
Right. To me, that would be it. If it was completely untethered from the iPhone, then that opens it up. Just like they did with iTunes, you know, when they made that available for the PC, it's kind of a bad example because iTunes is kind of messed up now because of that. But in any case, they saw a big adoption rate. So it may be something that they do. But as far as replacing your iPhone, do you think we'll ever get to that point, you know, a few years from now, that the watch would actually completely replace a need for a phone?
I could see that happening if AI agents became that good.
Right.
Because I think that we're moving towards a collective goal of never having to launch an app and never having to actually navigate or drill down into an interface. I think that we're moving towards a goal where we just express what we want done and the device we're using figures out how to do that. And we're getting really close to that. This is the fourth or fifth time I mentioned Google I/O, but a lot of the stuff that they were showing off, if they weren't talking about that as a goal, they were introducing a lot of actual functioning technologies that makes it superfluous to actually launch an app, because individual apps can just project a single feature from its app into this little chatbot client and make things happen and present information and deliver results. If these bots become good enough that I can't simply say I can't simply give a complex thing like get the latest version of the report that I was working on next Thursday, integrate it with the attachment to the email that Lucy sent me, and make sure that Bob gets it before 4 p.m. That's the sort of stuff where you wouldn't necessarily need a phone to operate four or five different apps to do 10 or 15 minutes worth of taps and clicks and swipes, because your agent knows exactly how to do that sort of stuff. A lot of it's going to have to come down to trust, though, and I'm not sure how good these agents are going to have to be before you just trust it to handle so many of your work. Just like it takes you a while before you trust an assistant when you say to your assistant, book me a table at that place where I met Lucy that time, and for him or her to know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, you're right. It has to get smarter. So I guess that would be Siri we'd be looking to for that.
Siri is an app platform. It's not just a voice assistant. I think that's something that has kind of been overlooked. That if you can write micro apps that respond to voice, it's not just a good hands-free thing for the car on a phone. It really does open up a whole class of devices, including devices where it's just like you can, if you're a watch manufacturer, you can buy in bulk 10,000 Swiss mechanical movements and just put it inside whatever case you want to design for it. If Apple were to decide that we have the Siri module that you can put in, so it takes up, it has this space requirement, has this power requirement, has this heat dissipation requirement, but you can design whatever watch you want around this module. So you can have this really beautiful $800 mechanical diver's watch, but it also has a little hole in the side of it. And if you just simply say, hey, Shlomo, do this, do that, do the other, it will actually get that done and then speak back to you that it's actually accomplished all the things you asked it to do. That's terribly interesting. It solves the problem that I started off talking about, which is that I don't like using this watch as a destination for my attention. I really want it to give it as little of my attention as possible. And if I could just simply give it a command, wait for it to simply acknowledge that it's done what I asked it to do, and then just put my wrist back down, that's all I really want.
Right. I mean, how do you think that the Apple Watch, kind of in the look at the future of things, you know, how there's this ecosystem of the iPhone, the iPad, the iMac, and maybe the Apple Car down the road. But what do you think of the Apple Watch working with that ecosystem? You think Apple has this kind of grand plan where everything still works together, or are they kind of hampered by that at this point?
It sure makes a lot of things easier once you have this hardware out there, like the ability to to sort of tag a person physically as they move throughout a room, that you can triangulate what room they're in based on what devices that they're near without even having to install beacons in every single room. And that's a useful way to sort of steer home automation. That's a useful way to have Siri be able to send you a notification that and turn on the microphones on a certain box because it knows that you're here right now. And if you're going to respond to something, here's where it's going to happen. The fact that they put so much work into the security of these devices, that where they know that if this person has identified themselves to this device, then this device can trust that it's sending this information to this person and this person only, and that's good enough to actually even do banking transactions, that the tap and pay works so well and so securely through the Apple Watch. The idea of having that kind of a secure token that you're carrying with you, just like you would carry a really, really good car key, there's a lot of stuff that you can plug that into. So I would be I'm hoping that Apple is really figuring that into all of their future plans, where is the fact that they've got this secure garden on someone's wrist on a device that has Bluetooth, how can we use that to make even our desktop computers easier to use? Why are we forcing someone to log in with a weak password when we could just simply automatically whatever Macintosh in the house they're in front of, they are automatically screen sharing to whatever their personal Macintosh is, stuff like that. But with that, there's also the danger where Apple becomes a company that is only good at designing things that work well with its own hardware. Mm-hmm. I've always had a little nagging worry that Apple is not demonstrating their ability to play this game at expert level. And as much as we make fun of Microsoft, as much as we make fun of Google for making these operating systems that don't really necessarily work perfectly on every device, they're playing the game at expert level. They have to make an operating system and make a software APIs that will work on a notional piece of hardware. That they're designing software for devices that they don't know exist yet. And so anybody who manufactures an Android phone, it's expected that this phone is going to work with whatever software, whatever operating system, whatever service is being written for this platform. The same is true of Microsoft. Apple has not been showing that kind of agility. The fact that you have an Apple Watch that works great with Apple's messaging system and it works great with Apple devices, and they've got phones that also work great with Apple Music and they work great with Apple Photos, but they don't integrate. They can't integrate with other services unless you farm that out to another company. I'm not saying this is a point of embarrassment, but it is on that short list of concerns I have about Apple. It is on that list because it's if the ground ever shifts just slightly underneath their feet, and it becomes a big disadvantage to lock yourself into a single platform, much more than it is right now, they're going to have to scramble to prove that they know how to make make services that will run on just about anything.
Right.
I wonder how long, how big of a success the Apple Watch can be if it sticks with just being a device that will work with iPhones, an operating system that is no longer the most popular. Well, has it ever been the most popular phone operating system? I don't think so, but I could be wrong about that. But it certainly isn't right now, because Apple can't make the phones that everybody in the world uses. They can't make that kind of variety of hardware, and so that in itself is sort of a limiting factor on how big the Apple Watch can ever be. So I would like to see them make these devices that are really platform non-specific, platform independent.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like doing a podcast just about the Apple Watch. It's only going to grow so far. We're only going to get to a certain level. But as Tim Cook said, I think this was just this past week, he said, do you think one day we'll look back on the Apple Watch and wonder how did we ever get along without this?
I think so.
Yeah.
As I've been saying, some things have been critical about Apple Watch, but I do have the correct perspective. We have to remind ourselves that we think about the success of the first generation and even the second generation iPhone in terms of the success of the current iPhone. It really did take a couple of years for Apple to spin that up until it was a credible alternative to a BlackBerry. It was, even though it sold like gangbusters, it wasn't selling. It was not true that you could do everything with an iPhone that you could do with the cheapest feature phone that was available from pretty much any competitor. It really did take until the iPhone 3G that it started to become the novelty of the multi-touch interface didn't also have to compensate for all the features that are lacking in it, including just simple security and enterprise features that were just absolute deal breakers for so many people. So it's perfectly okay for the Apple Watch to take a few generations before it gets that status where you can't believe you ever got along without your Apple Watch. And if you pulled out of your driveway and you're 2 miles away from your house, you remember that you forgot your Apple Watch, or you left the charger attached to your nightstand. You don't care if you're now at risk of missing your flight. You will turn around and go back and get it because the Apple Watch is such an important part of your daily existence. So it's such a cheap, poor thing to be claiming success or failure for anything in the first year or something. Again, Apple has a plan for this. They have a few years before people should ask rather pointed questions about what they're doing with this device. And it's going to take a couple of years before they really get that stuff locked down. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens in 2017, let's say, with Apple Watch, when they make their own. I feel as though we're not going to see a new version of the hardware this year, but I feel like we're going to see it next year. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what the operating system is like and what the hardware is like after they've had a couple of years of experience and all that stuff that was on that whiteboard of things that Apple hopes to get to, but they couldn't to make their original ship date. All those things start to get checked off.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm one of those who would turn around. we talked to a company called Wristly that does research specifically about the Apple Watch. And that was one of their questions 1 week, was a very detailed SurveyMonkey questionnaire about how if you left your watch at home and you were a certain distance away and you knew you wouldn't be late, would you turn around and get it? If you knew you'd be late, would you? Majority of the Apple Watch owners at least said they would turn around. So the people who use it do love it that much, at least. So Andy, we really want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today. It was so nice talking to you. Had a lot of fun. We would love to do this again sometime, maybe when the Watch 2 is announced.
Certainly. I had a lot of fun tonight.
Yes. And by the way, the article that you mentioned, is that coming out next week?
I think it'll be coming out next week. It's in the hands of my editors right now.
Okay.
And sometimes, given that it's not, you know, breaking news about things that affect people's commutes and people's lives right, in Chicago. Right. Sometimes it's lower on the list of things that they get around to editing. So I'm hoping next week.
And where can people find that?
Go to suntimes.com, or if you follow my Twitter feed, I'm Anatko on Twitter, IHNATKO. I usually tweet out links to the stuff as they're published on the site.
But you can also hear Andy on MacBreak Weekly every week, as well as the Anatko Almanac and the Material Podcast. And you said your website is anatko.com, correct?
Correct. You have to, the price of admission to ride the Andy ride is spelling my last name.
Correctly.
Exactly.
That's your ticket. That's your pass.
There's an H in there somewhere.
The mnemonic device, as told to me first by a video rental store clerk, who was the only person who could like just remember and type in my ID because it was last names, and that was all. Gee, you never have to ask for how to spell it. Well, because I just think of it as I have no idea how to spell this person's name.
Awesome.
There you go. That's how you're going to remember it. Well, thanks again, Andy. It's been our pleasure to talk to you. And that's all the time we have for this episode. Thank you, Scott and Vincent, as always, for being here. And thank you out there for listening. Look for our regular show next Sunday. And we also recently added a donation button to our website. If you'd like to support our show, please donate there. Every little bit helps keep us going. So donate, and we'll thank you on the show. Your moment of fame awaits. And we truly do thank you for your support. And don't forget to take advantage of our special discount for listeners, 15% off your purchase of bands from Clockwork Synergy. It doesn't apply to sale items, of course, when you use the promo code 15AppleWC. That's 15AppleWC from our interview last week on the show. They were kind enough to give our listeners that discount. So treat yourself to a new look on your Apple Watch. You can find our show notes and links on our website at applewatchcast.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes so you never, ever miss an episode, and leave us a review while you're there. If you have any questions about the Apple Watch or about our show, send us an email at comments@applewatchcast.com. Like us on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter at Apple Watchcast. Thanks for listening. Until our next show, you're on your own time.
Remember to rate us 5 stars on iTunes.
Thank you, Andy. That was great.
That was a lot of fun.
See, I like how Andy doesn't lose his voice throughout this.
Yeah, I tend to lose it and have to clear it. It's like, you know, hour two, I'm done. I guess that's practice, right?
Well hydrated.
So today I've learned that we need a less expensive watch. It's round, and it's a predictive assistant that you trust, talk to, monitors your health, and is untethered.
Round. Have a good night, guys.
All right.
Great. Okay, you too.
Thanks, Andy.
Cheers.
Bye. Bye-bye.